And that jarring cacophony crashing into the Dominic Glynn version of the Doctor Who theme tells you that once again, you're back with the Power of Three podcast, and it's day six of our little run, this little mini-series, as we look at A Doctor a Day, based on a novel published back in the 90s or the noughties, featuring a different incarnation of our favourite Time Lord. I'm Kenny Smith.
And I'm David Steele. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Why are we doing this? Because we're counting down to the new series, starting with Shooty Gatwa and Millie Gibson.
Shooty Gatwa, Shooty Gatwa.
I don't know why it does this, listeners. It's right over my head. Over my head, which is obviously... Let me just double check before I finish what I'm saying. It's worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it. It is worth it, I promise. Cool. I don't know why he does that, listeners. It's way over my head, as the Flaming Groovies once sang.
My God, you and your bizarre obscure musical references. They're worse than my obscure Doctor Who references.
And that's saying something, yes. Isn't it, listeners? Listeners, we won't be playing out with Way Over My Head by the Flaming Groovies, sadly, but I would encourage you to find it on your music supplier of choice, because it's a banger. Anyway, Kenny... It's day six. What does that mean?
That means it's got to be an adventure in space and time and other things with the Sixth Doctor as played by Colin Baker.
TV's Colin Baker, FS now.
Who was a pointless answer on Pointless a couple of days ago.
All right.
It was contestants and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And the two guys who were on got to the final.
Right.
And they were, because you had to be there, a contestant from whatever it was, the 2000 up to 2009.
Right.
Or 2010 up to present.
Right.
And they went with Colin in both lots. And he was a pointless answer.
Fantastic. That's the only time I think let's be honest, listeners, given some of the quality of some of the people that they get on, if nudge, know what I mean. It's very occasionally I would watch I'm a Celebrity, but that was one that I remember watching the start of and seeing Colin sort of floating in some awful swamp somewhere and looking really, really regretful. But he did well out of it. He got himself back on lots of quiz shows and stuff on ITV over the next year or two. It was very good for his profile.
Yep.
I remember him being on This Morning and introducing himself. He was disguised as Santa. And then he was revealed and said, it's me, Colin Baker from Doctor Who. And at this point, 2012, I think it would have been, 2012, 2013, something like that, because Danny was still staying here at that point. And it was like, Matt was the Doctor by that point. And I was just like, go on yourself, Colin. You milk it for all that it's worth, mate.
Absolutely.
And Colin could always milk it for all that it was worth. God bless him.
Talking of I'm a Celebrity, I had a thing pop up in my Facebook timeline the other day. I don't know if you saw my tweet about this yesterday.
I can't remember.
It was...
Was this about your Big Brother audition?
Oh, no. Right. No. Big Brother 2 I applied for. Never got the audition. No, this was about...
Listeners, can you imagine? Anyway.
Yeah. No, don't.
Can you imagine Kenny on the cover of FHM and his scants? Anyway.
Down, boys and girls. I know how much you want to think about it. But yes, I got an email a few years ago.
Right.
And this was 2013.
I did see this, yes.
And I had been at Big Finish Day number 3 mm-hmm. in Barking. And I was the very, very, very bottom of the guest list and the dinner list.
Right.
Kenny Smith. So, you know, like Tom...
Was it alphabetical?
No. No, it was like, I think Tom Baker was the absolute top guest. And, you know, so he got the first lunch. Right. And you work your way down and there's my name at the bottom. But then I got an email from... an actor friend, right. And also CC'd in it were Dean Gaffney, who appeared in EastEnders, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and also Mohammed George, who played Gus the Road Sweeper, also in EastEnders, so I'm in such august company.
Listeners, who's the most famous person you've been CC'd into an email with? Write into the earth2podcast@gmail.com and Peter will forward that on to us. So, the Sixth Doctor now. As a Doctor Who fan in the 90s, one of the best things about the original novels and Big Finish was what they did for the Sixth Doctor. They didn't change anything about him, didn't rehabilitate him, but they gave him some new adventures. I remember just the joy of reading time of your life and state of change and millennial rights and etc. Because I was one of those fans who really liked what Colin did on television. He was the doctor. He is one of my doctors. And the real excitement for me at the start of these books was like, I'm not that fussed about another fourth doctor story because he's had loads, but we're getting some new Colins. And Time of Your Life, without a shadow of a doubt, in the words of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, is one of the absolute best. It really is. I remember this one coming out and just almost spasms of joy as I was reading it. What's your thoughts on that whole thing then, Ken?
I agree with you. I think it was a really, really exciting time, given that there were so many new adventures. So Sylvester had had plenty. Obviously, Peter had had a good run in TV as well. And we know that the first four Doctors had plenty of episodes too. So yeah, we got an extension of Colin's 31 episodes on TV as the Doctor. Spot my very quick mental calculation there.
Not bad. And 32 if you include Androzani Part 4.
Well, okay, we'll go with that. We'll make it 32.
Dimensions and time, anyway.
That's another story for another day. But I was, like you, very pleased and thought, here we go, chance to do something with Colin and to give his Doctor. And see, he didn't need that. He needed some love. I think that was the problem, because, as we know, during his time in the show, there was an awful lot of strife behind the scenes between the script editor, Eric Sayward, and the producer, John Nathan Turner. And that obviously didn't help things when there was a bad creative atmosphere around. So Colin was unfortunately a victim of those horrible circumstances.
Yeah, and victim of circumstances, the thing, I mean, it's right place, wrong time. And it's such a shame because, you know, we all know from what he's done in BF and stuff since, you know, The Quinn Dilemma has recently come out celebrating 40 years of Colin's Doctor. And it was a brilliant set. There is a scene in the fourth episode two scenes. One that I laughed at a lot, which is when the four different versions of the Sixth Doctor all meet, but when the Doctor lists the Sixth Doctor's timeline and lists all the companions in what order, and listeners, I'm not lying when I say I listened to it about five times, and I rewound it and rewound it and rewound it. I listened to it about five or six times because it's joyous.
Dave, why don't we listen to that right now?
Oh, that'd be glorious.
It goes like this. Perry, Frobisher. Perry and Frobisher. Perry. Grant. Perry again. Matthew Sharp. Evelyn. Oh yes, Frobisher. Frobisher. Perry. Actis and Calf. Jamie and Zoe. Evelyn. Evelyn and Thomas Brewster. Back to Evelyn. Mel, first time. Jago and Lightfoot. Mila. Jamie. Flip. Perry, Jason and Crystal. And Zog. Constance and Flip, Mari, Mel and Evelyn, and back to Mel. Simple.
And of course, as you've just heard, there was one character in particular who Colin's just mentioned who made my ears prick up.
Yes, a character which is introduced in the book we have chosen to highlight today and on day six, which is none other than Time of Your Life by friend of the show, Steve Lyons.
Yes, very exciting. This was an obvious choice because we've discussed this book between ourselves so often. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is a great chance to put it in the spotlight. And it's also the first half of effectively a two-part story, which we'll hopefully get a sequel to this episode as well. But yes, it's a story that takes the Sixth Doctor, we join him on his adventures as he's effectively trying not to become the Valiant.
Yeah, it's kind of set... It's set between Trial of a Time Lord and Time in the Rani, and this is the whole thing. There's such a vast canvas, you know, to play with, because no one knows exactly, you know, how long the Sixth Doctor was around between, you know, leaving the Trial space station and ending up with a sore head in Lakersha. And this one is sort of set immediately after the Doctor's got rid of Melanie, taken her to wherever it is, but he's kind of gone into sort of, he's become a recluse, he's trying to avoid his destiny, he's trying to keep himself out of being involved in anything that might lead him towards being the Valyard, and he's just basically, it's doing that hermit sort of thing that he talked about doing in The Twin Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you first meet the Doctor in this one, he's not in the best sort of state, you know, his clothes are a bit shabby and all this sort of stuff, and he'll eventually, without giving too much away, he becomes involved. But before I go any further with this, I'll quickly read you the back cover blurb to further set the scene. Time of Your Life, an original novel featuring the Sixth Doctor. Organic bugs must be purged from the system, the screen told him. Then more succinctly, you die. The network broadcasts entertainment to the planets of the Mizon system, Death Hunt 3000, Prisoner, The Next Generation, Bloodsoak Bunny. 16 channels, not one of them worth watching. But for the citizens of poverty-stricken Torok, television offers the only escape from a reality too horrible to face. A young inhabitant of Torok leaps at the chance to travel to the network with a hermit who calls himself the Doctor. However, all is not well on the giant chaotic space station. A soap star has murdered his wife's lover, the robotic regulars of Time Riders are performing random kidnappings, and a lethal new game show is about to go on air. Can the Doctor uncover the cause of the apparently random disturbances? Or will his appearance as a competitor on Death Hunt 3000 be the last of his life? This adventure takes place immediately after the television story The Ultimate Foe. Steve Lyons is the author of Conundrum, one of the most popular Doctor's new adventures, and is a co-author of the best-selling Red Dwarf Programme Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Tons about this just comes flooding back from reading this. I mean, my main memory of this one is that it had a sort of sense of, have you ever seen Arnold Schwarzenegger film The Running Man?
Yeah.
This was Doctor Who doing The Running Man.
Yes.
And very, you know, like a quite similar to Gareth's book Tragedy Day, which was run about the same time. It was a kind of forward-looking critical look at television and the way it might go, preempting a lot of the reality TV stuff that we've become used to in the 21st century. And just doing some brilliant stuff with Colin. Really true and authentic to what he did on television. I mean, that's... And which one of the things that sticks made most about it was just because it was... He was... You know, what's the word? He wasn't reconstituted already. He was completely authentic. Colin captured perfectly by Steve in this, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's this book is way ahead of its time in predicting so much of what's to come in reality TV, particularly with Death Hunt 3000. As you're basically taking normal people and making them the stars of shows.
Yeah.
So you don't. It's unscripted, and you just it's cameras following people and what they're doing in a particularly confined setting.
And of course, the year 3000, where not much had changed, but everyone lived underwater. Which is could that be a hint of what we're playing out with today? Probably not. I just did that because Kenny. There was a bit of confab on Twitter the other week when Kenny finally discovered that busted song from over 20 years ago and was talking about it. But anyway, we mentioned earlier, we alluded to this book introduces two new companions for the Doctor. There's Angela, who sadly doesn't make it to the end, and the character of Grant Markham, who would appear in the follow-up book, Killing Grounds. So I'm sure, hopefully, Kenny has asked Steve about some of this stuff.
Oh yes, it's all there. The fact that we're sold that a very clever misstep because we think Angela's going to be the new companion.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she isn't, which I think is very... I think it's not what you expect, but this was the great thing because, obviously, if it was TV, they'd announce the new companion of is course. Played by, whereas in the books, you could do that. Yep. Nobody knew. It's like Big Finish can do that as well.
It's almost kind of like what happened with Susie in Torchwood, in a way.
Yes.
And I would love it if the TV series had the balls, if you pardon the expression, to do something like that. Will they ever... Will Russell listen to this episode and decide to do it in season 4 of the revived series? Who can say? So, we've rambled enough.
We have for now.
Let's jump over to Kenny's chat with Steve Lyons.
I'm Steve Lyons and I wrote Time of Your Life.
So, Steve, when the Missing Adventures were announced, was that a range you were quite keen to get into, having done, say, been involved in new adventures?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Just for the chance to go back and... You know, writing in the different eras of Doctor Who. I think at the time, a lot of people saw them as second best to the new adventures because they weren't taking the series forward. But I never saw that at all because I always felt that Doctor Who works best in self-contained stories anyway. So it was just an opportunity to play with, you know, a lot of different characters, different Doctors and companions. I was very keen.
Yeah, and I suppose that given at this point we are long before the Big Finish version of the Sixth Doctor. Mm-hmm. And was he one that you were quite keen to do just to try and sort of repair the perceived damage that the Sixth Doctor had been given?
Yeah, exactly that, because I felt at the time like everyone was going for their favourite eras and recreating them. And for some reason, that wasn't what appealed to me. I wanted to look at the eras that I thought could have worked better than they did. I wanted to get in there and just do them slightly differently. So, you know, I wanted to write the Sixth Doctor, I wanted to write Mel. But, you know, that's what appealed to me from the beginning. Later on, I got to do some of my favourite eras, but that was my starting point. That's what I wanted to do first.
Because I think that, you know, very much we've got a Sixth Doctor post-trial you know, fighting against his own future. So I suppose it's that X-Files fight the future. And because he knows what's coming and he's sort of trying to put it off. But the Doctor being the Doctor, he can't stay away from trouble for long, can he?
No. And as I said, I just wanted to they seem to set up issues in the series. You know, they made it more violent. They made the Doctor a bit more immoral sometimes. But they never seem to deal with them. They just presented it as happening without ever... you discussing it and making an issue of it. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to explore that rather than just, you know, present it as the way things are.
So we've got a hell of a lot of satire on TV in here. So I assume that was your starting point and then building worlds around that.
I think it must have been, yeah. I think it was still, a bit second novel syndrome, that I was trying to think what it was that people had liked and that the publishers had liked about the first one. So, you know, I took the idea that it had the fictional character tropes in there and found another way to do something. And I tried to make it different in some other ways. It's a much more violent and serious book than Conundrum was. But I did rely on some stuff that I knew had worked before.
And of course, you very quickly introduce us to Angela, who we all think perfect companion material. And then, of course, you do slightly pull the carpet from under her feet with her.
That was just exactly the intention of that. I think I'd read something about how clever it is in Psycho. You think you're following one particular character, and then she gets knocked to death in the shower, famously. And the film is about something else. So I think I had that in mind. But that I knew I was introducing a new companion in that story. And actually, I think I'd already, the way I was structuring it, I already had the Doctor spending the first few chapters on one planet before moving elsewhere. So it just occurred to me to introduce a fake new companion in those early chapters and then just, as you say, pull out the rug a few chapters in and make it somebody else.
Yeah. Now, having reread it, I was slightly impressed by the amount of foreshadowing of what has since become the norm in TV. The fact we've got so much, pretty much reality TV, whatever they call, is it the simulated reality type things of things like The Only Way is Essex and Made in Chelsea, when we have that in Jubilee Towers. We've got the one that really made me smile was the holographic actors. So effectively you've preempted what was the whole Hollywood Actors Guild strike there.
I suppose so. I never thought of that at the time. That was just I was just using future technology in a logical way. But yeah, all the reality stuff, I mean, that was happening at the time. If anything, I think there's possibly a bit less of it now than there was. At that time, it was the new thing. It just seemed to be all that anybody was making. I mean, you know, of course, there's Doctor Who fans who were all a bit bitter about that because they were making it instead of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I also noticed there was a nice little reference to the Paracon Corporation in there when you're talking about VR, so a little Paradise of Death reference snuck in there too. Very cheeky. Very cheeky.
I forgot that, but I can see me doing that because that would only have been a couple of years earlier, wouldn't it? So I would have just... Yeah.
And I can tell you're definitely having a lot of fun with the spoofs that are in there, for example, like the Prisoner Cell Block H version with the freak and just so much satire and sort of shows at the time, particularly Australian shows. I think there was a mention of a Grundy in there as well, so I'd imagine that'd be a nod to Grundy television and Neighbours.
Well, probably more Prisoner Cell Block H, to be honest. Again, I was obsessed by that programme at the time. Still am to a large extent.
Interesting. Yeah, I suppose that's the thing. When you know that, by and large, the people who were reading these books, people like myself, we were multimedia literate, so we would get all these references because we were all pretty much watching the same kind of shows around this time.
Yeah, I would have thought so. We were watching what was left of scripted dramas, weren't we? The onslaught of reality.
Yeah, and you know, characters like Zed Mantelli, who I'm for some reason picturing as a version of Chris Evans, at the time, sort of the hyper ego me element of it.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think I really cast him as such in my head, but he was, you know, an archetype of that sort of presenter. Yeah.
Yeah, Terry Christian, whoever else was sort of that sort of.
Oh, probably more him actually. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that would. I'd only just thought of Terry Christian and everything like that. Yeah, that definitely.
That fits. I can imagine that. Yeah.
And of course, the other one that I actually noticed was that one of the channels is called Wolf TV. So I'm like to think that it probably rebranded itself very soon after to become Bad Wolf TV.
Quite unlikely, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell I'm a fan. I always join these things together, linking them all up. We've got this wonderful through line, of course, of the alien intelligence approaching throughout and bit by bit taking over, and society begins to break down very, very quickly because of the lack of television.
I'm not sure I remember the plot in that depth, actually. And yeah, I think it was some satire that it's not informing anymore. And then, you know, too obsessed with other things. To recognise the threat as it approaches, I guess. But yeah, I'm dredging up memories now. I don't really remember that thing.
Well, I'm sure you'll remember Miriam Walker, that the older lady who's a TV campaigner with the initials MW. Where did that come from, Steve?
Yeah, I have no idea. I think I just imagined that character completely. I can't think what the inspiration for her would have been. Yeah. Again, she was a big like hate figure for Doctor Who fans at the time, wasn't she? Because she got an episode edited. evil woman.
Yes, the ultimate crime. And also the fact she's got her assistant Glinda, who I throughout reading it, I was imagining her being like Rhonda is for Mother in Series 6 of the Avengers. Statuesque blonde characters, sort of bodyguard sort. So,
I think there are probably too many characters in that novel, and I can't remember all of them.
And of course, we got the Zyrons and Time Riders as well. Another little bit of satire there with the sci-fi show that's been cancelled, and the fans will do anything to bring it back.
That had to be in there. Yeah, it was just everything that was happening in TV at the time, you know, through the lens of, as I said before, Doctor Who fans better than they were making Doctor Who. They were making rubbish instead.
Yeah. So going back to the character of the Doctor, how did you find writing for, you know, Colin as, I say Colin, the Sixth Doctor, given that, as you said, he had these excesses with Vengeance and Varos and the likes, and here at least you're able to sort of get him sort of stopping, reflecting, and sort of almost calming down is not quite the phrase that is needed, but sort of just that the introspective sort of giving him that chance to reassess himself and become a different man.
Mm-hmm. That was it. I mean, it wasn't too different from writing any other Doctor in that most of it I'm just trying to keep in my head how he would have performed it on screen and try to capture the flavour of that performance and write lines that I can imagine Colin Baker delivering. It's more or less, as I said before, the only real spin I put on it was making him a bit more aware of when he was going over the top and not acting like he would in previous incarnations and just keeping him those moments of struggle against it. It was something that I just felt wasn't confronted on screen. It should have been a companion's job, you know. Perry should have been pulling him up whenever he went over the line, and instead all she did was whine about him burning the dinner. in the end, I left it to the Doctor to looking at the TV episodes, I thought bringing in fresh from having met the Valyard seemed to be a good opportunity to, you know, to have him stop and think about the direction he's going in, so that he could bring some checks and balances into his own behaviour. But for the most part, it was just, you know, it was actually writing him as he had been in season 23, but just with that little extra bit of reflection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it definitely comes across. I think there's a bit during Death Hunt 3000, your wonderful running man type spoof. And he's sort of being pursued by Anjor, the murderer fella who enjoys killing. And at one point, the Doctor sort of knocks, sort of uses an axe to his neck, but only knocks him out. And then the Doctor reflects on his actions. I think that's, you know, where there's a big difference. And he's thinking, I shouldn't be doing this sort of thing. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much the watershed moment for him, I think.
I think, and that was very deliberate, because there's a lot of moments in season 22. When I think Eric Seward's idea for season 22 is that he's going to push the Doctor into situations where there's no other way out than to use some form of violence. And I can appreciate that he did that. But again, what's missing is the self-reflection. I think we've been there a few moments, like the end of the second Spider-Man, I think Lad's right. But generally, he just... He does it without it becoming an issue, and I just wanted to put him in that sort of situation again and say, well, you know, this is how I think the Doctor should react when he's pushing to do something like that.
Yeah, I definitely feel that there was that change he has that moment. Now, you mentioned Perry and burning the dinner and such like a minute ago. Here we do get the new companion in Grant Markham, who is... throughout the book, and you never really see him becoming the new companion until just literally at the end when he starts to prove himself, because I think he is pretty much like how most of us would react. He does get scared. There's no sort of false bravery or bravado about him. He's very much reacting to the situation, and he isn't afraid to admit that he's scared at moments, and the Doctor brings out the best in him.
Yeah. I think, I mean, part of the reason for that characterization is that I originally submitted the story with Mel in, and the idea was that it was going to be Mel's first story set in that weird part of continuity where the Doctor has just left Mel after the trial and knows that he's going to meet her. And that's why I originally submitted, and that's why Grant is a computer programmer, because I thought, if I want to put Mel in this story, I'm going to make it a role for a computer programmer, and we can actually see her doing that for the first time instead of waiting till 2023, as it turned out. And then he was Rebecca Davina Virgin, who said, well, you know, we thought we might expand that area, so would you like to introduce another companion that comes in before Mel? So I think, you know, my starting point for it was that, well, I've sort myself with the computer programmer now, but so I better make him as different from Mel as I possibly can in every other respect, starting with making him a bloke. So, but that sort of led me to thinking about having someone that, you know, that isn't notably brave or looking for adventure, and then just kind of ends up with the Doctor by accident, and does perhaps, you know, react a bit more like most normal people would in that situation. And again, that fed into the fact that became somebody who wasn't going to check the Doctor on his behaviour, because I didn't think he was going to be, you know, strong enough to do that, which is why he ended up with the Doctor doing it himself. So that, you know, that ties back into that decision as well.
Do you remember if you had anybody in mind to play him when you were creating him and writing him back in the day?
No, I really didn't. And at one point, I actually flipped through Spotlight to see if I could find somebody that looked like I imagined him. But no, there was nobody like that. I was really pleased when Alistair painted him on the front cover of Killing Ground, because that was the first time I thought, oh yeah, I can, you know, I can imagine that person walking around and looking like that.
Yeah, Alistair Pearson with straight hair.
You know, I didn't know Alistair well enough to see that at the time, but everyone was saying that. But what I thought was that looks a bit like Mark Strickland. And when I did speak to him about it a few years later, he did say that he'd used a little bit of Mark in it as well. Yeah, everyone sees Alistair in it.
I think it's just the shape of the jaw. It just seems
so, yeah. I mean, yeah, it is. It's just, you know, it's not, it's a bit unfair, isn't it? Because he's not that similar, but it's just. So there's just that little bit that go, but when you know him, you think, oh yeah, and you can see that you've got that little detail in front of himself. Yeah. But, you know, to me, that picture really, really brought into life. It was, you know, that was someone that I could imagine existing.
Yeah, I suppose that does make a difference when you have that to help. Of course, he would return, but did you know that you would be writing him, or did you imagine that maybe somebody else picking up the baton?
I thought that somebody else might, and then I mean, the second story I did, Killing Ground, I had in mind while I was writing the first one, and I set it up to some degree. I think what we maybe didn't realise so much when we embarked upon this was that, you know, trying to do a story arc in the Missing Adventures, you've only got 12 slots a month and there's 6 different Doctors to get through, and people want to do 6 Doctor and Mel stories and 6 Doctor and Perry stories. So, you know, you're only going to get a story out every 18 months, 2 years. And so, you know, my initial thought probably was that, oh, there'd be like 6 stories and other people are like the middle ones, and I'll come back and do the finale when he goes back home and meets the Cybermen. And then you get that gradual realisation that, you know, the books aren't going to last long enough. or it's, you know, it's going to be 10 years before we get there. And that's why after the first one, I thought, no, I should probably just submit the Cyberman story now.
Good job you did. Thanks to BBC and the license.
and we just snuck that in before the range ended.
Yeah. So how do you look back on Time of Your Life now? I mean, it's a gorgeous cover. Great work from Paul Campbell with that Sixth Doctor, the boiler suit, and the Not Godzilla attacking Neo Tokyo.
I don't know what to make of it now. I was a bit disappointed with the reviews that weren't as good as they had been for Conundrum. So I've not really looked back at it for a long time. But for some reason, recently, a few people have been telling me they loved it, which, you know, at first surprised
me.
which at first was a huge surprise because I wasn't used to hearing it, but it's happened a few times now and it's made me think I should go back and have another look at that. I was pleased with it when I delivered it. As I said earlier, when looking back, I do think I could streamline it a bit and just combine a few characters, and I think I was still getting used to expanding the story to 80,000 words because they are big books, and I think I did that by meandering a bit and bringing in too many plot threads. And if, you know, if I could go back and rewrite it, I'd clean that up a bit. I think I'd have to go back and have another look at it. So I haven't done for several decades.
Well, I think you should, because I think you might be pleasantly surprised, because I was really enjoying it. And I only stopped reading it when I was tired in the evening. So I read it over 3 evenings and it was good. It's very good. So
I do like what I did with the Sixth Doctor, but again, I think I did that slightly more successfully in the follow-up in Killing Ground. I think that is that's a better book overall, and that was much more popular. So then, you know, I tend to think of that one more fondly.
Well, Steve, to me, that sounds like not only was that a sequel to Time of Your Life, it sounds like there should be a sequel episode to this podcast, and we should come back and revisit it soon.
Anytime.
Fantastic. Steve, thank you so much once again.
Hey, cheers.
And thank you, Steve, and thanks again for sending my copy of Time in Your Life at Novel Experiences.
What was Novel Experiences?
It was that brilliant one-day convention, Derby, run by the Hoovers, that we went to last year, and we got lots of books signed, and it was brilliant. And it's actually, it could be the first time you and I have mentioned it in this little run, which is astonishing that it's taken us so long.
That is
normally
incredible.
I mean, obviously, I've had a few days off, but, you know, normally we'd if Paul Leonard had been at the Novel Experiences, we'd have mentioned it then. But yes, thank you so much, Steve. I love this book. It's one that I remember rereading 2 or 3 years after the event as a treat, because it was so good. And, you know, so much of it's so clear in my head. The sense of things spiralling out of control, Angela's death, Grant being introduced in a very low-key way that you don't anticipate, you know, in a way that maybe, you know, Stephen was introduced partway through the chase, for example, that sort of thing. It's you know, the character sort of built up gradually, and Colin has just caught perfectly this sense that the Doctor is just sort of almost not quite happy at who he is, but knows there's not really anything he can do about it, you know?
Yeah. And something we haven't mentioned is the cover by Paul Campbell, where the Doctor's got a boiler suit on when he's playing Death Hunter 3000.
Yes, and it's tattered and torn, and you can see his familiar clothes underneath. And significantly, Colin's hair sort of painted grey, which makes me think that the Sixth Doctor hadn't the time to get his roots done after leaving the Trial Space Station.
Definitely.
And then, of course, there's the image of the big Godzilla-type creature rampaging
through. Which is what I remembered. And I remembered that being far more prominent, but it's not. It's only really there when Grant's on the run.
Yeah. The little side panels were always quite interesting, because they would sort of recreate a little tiny aspect of the story, and it was always fun sort of spotting that. Whereas obviously, significantly, the Doctor is just on his own in this cover. There's no companion sharing the space with him. We'll talk about that when we do Killing Ground in the run-up to the Christmas special.
Probably. Absolutely.
Probably.
Unless we just do it as a one-off, because we like doing these.
Oh, we'll see what happens, yeah, if I've got time to read it after I have to reread everything else and I have to read the complete... I've got to read the entirety of the 70s run of Secret Society of Supervillains before the end of the year. So we'll see how I got on with that.
How many episodes is that?
Well, it's I think it ran to 15 issues, but it crossed over with the Freedom Fighters and it crossed over with a couple of issues of Super Team Family, and it was one-off special, and... Actually, it didn't cross over the Freedom Fighters because it was cancelled before that, but we need to talk about that. Listeners, if you're vaguely interested in what I'm talking about, check out the Earth 2 podcast every Thursday, wherever you find your podcasts. So, shall we look once again at I Who and see what it had
Absolutely.
To say at the time?
I've also got Craig Hinton's DW.
Oh, give us that first then. That'll be good. Because I used to find myself disagreeing with Craig Hinton quite often.
I found myself completely disagreeing with him in virtually everything when I've been looking through these reviews of late.
There was one particular, I think I've said this before, one Seventh Doctor book he did. I remember swearing when I read it because it seemed to me that he hadn't read it. He made sweeping generalisations about what the Doctor and Bernice and Ace were up to. And it was completely at odds with what was actually happening in the book. And I was a bit like, hang on, mate. Anyway, what does Craig have to say?
Well, Craig says, if I tell you that the most normal person in this book is the Sixth Doctor, then you might get some feeling for the rest. Vain alcoholic Day, not Stevie, is a typical example of a soap star with a messed up private life, while cleanup campaigner Miriam Walker is frighteningly familiar. Even more amusing are the fans of the ditched Time Rider series, instantly recognisable to anyone who's ever attended a science fiction convention. Although the large cast is thoroughly entertaining, it leads to my main complaint about the book. There are too many people. I had great difficulty following parts of Time of Your Life. I was constantly flicking back and forth to identify who was doing what and to whom. In many books, this wouldn't be a problem, but the complex, multi-layered plot of Time of Your Life demands full attention from the reader. I disagree with that because I knew exactly who they were.
Yes, you got the sense, I mean, this is what I was saying about it feeling authentic. In a similar way to, say, Sabred stories like Resurrection of the Daleks or Revelation of the Daleks, you've got groups of characters that quite often don't interact with the others. But you can imagine this group of actors all being in a studio for this day, and then they got this next bunch of actors in over the next couple of days. That's what I said about it being authentic. It felt very season 21, very season 22. And the best, I think, Sixth Doctor spin-off stuff, be it BF, be it the books or whatever, doesn't attempt to kind of... you know, change the real essence of what season 22 and 23 were like. They might do interesting and different types of stories that we didn't get on TV, but they still feel like you would have watched it between Ultimate Phone Time and the Rani. I mean, there was one of the, I'm going off on a slight tangent, but there's one wave that of Lisa Greenwood's flip stories, which I remember just being like, this is so season 22 it hurts, but it's good. That's the difference. You know, there's a proper balance and it doesn't feel utterly sordid. Anyway, does Craig continue?
There's quite a lot more, but I'll just go to the last paragraph here. When Craig wasn't impressed by being tricked about Angela being the new companion, and then
right.
She wasn't.
Okay.
But the Doctor, on the other hand, is handled with panache. All the hallmarks of his sixth incarnation are present. His arrogance, his compassion, his propensity for physical action. Indeed, this last characteristic is very important because Time of Your Life is an exploration of television violence and it doesn't shy away from the blood and gore. Although it occasionally gets carried away with its own complexities, it is a thought-provoking and frequently amusing read. I think that's actually doing this book a huge disservice.
Yeah.
I think it's a great read from start to finish.
Yeah.
And what Steve did here is so prophetic of what came 20th
yeah.
century. Also his audio that he did, the sequel to Beep the Meat, the ratings war.
Sure. Oh yeah, of course.
Beep is yeah. also similar sort uh-huh. of taking a look
yeah.
at, particularly with Big Brother in that case.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's Time Your Life's one of the best original Doctor Who novels. It's in my top five Missing Adventures, probably my top five of the Virgin books. I remember it very, very well, and it's for me, it's a complete success and everything. So what we've been doing the last few days, listeners, is also reading the reviews, short summing up reviews from I Who. So this is what Lars Pearson had to say about Time of Your Life. It's been said that Time of Your Life features the same kind of violence that made season 22 so unpopular, goes on too many tangents and is overall too long. All of that's true. but there's a lot of pointed TV satire here, turning Time of Your Life into Vengeance and Varos done well. Both Grant and the doomed Katarina-like Angela come through as stellar companions, though Grant's used better in Killing Ground. It's tangled overall, but interesting if viewed as a demonstration of TV becoming real. What are you talking about, Vengeance and Varos done well? Have you seen Vengeance and Varos? It's hecking marvellous. Apart from a couple of dubious bits that we...
The men in pants.
A couple of dubious bits we'll talk about when we decide to do an episode on the three Philip Martin Doctor Who stories, if we haven't done so already. I don't agree entirely with everything that Lars says. You and I think obviously are a bit more enthusiastic about this, but it's what I like about it is the influences are clear, but at the same time it's using influences that are obvious, it's authentic to the era, and it's also kind of casting an eye on the future and using its imagination. So I'm surprised that Craig didn't really grasp that, to be honest, but not to worry.
Yeah. Oh well, we enjoyed it, and that's what matters. And listeners, we hope you did too.
Yes. Write in and let us know, or reply to the comments on the socials. Please feel free to comment on any of our Facebook posts or Twitter posts or whatever. Let us know what you think of this book. Yeah, as I say, theearth2podcast@gmail.com. So yes.
So Dave.
Yes, it's day 7 tomorrow. It's getting a bit chilly around here, isn't it?
It is, it's a bit too cold, but we'll get our winter woolies on later.
Absolutely.
But Dave, before we go.
Yes, Kenny.
I was wondering.
Yes, Kenny.
Are you a fan of Green Day?
Listeners, it's obvious what song we have to play with today. Am I a fan of Green Day? No, not really. I remember going to see them at Barra's in January 1998, when the Nimrod album had sort of revived their fortunes a little bit, because I felt they were on their way down a dumper by that point. And I'm astonished they've managed to endure as long as they have, quite frankly. But Time of Your Life is a stone-cold classic, and that's what we have to play it with today. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life. So take the photographs and still frames in your mind, hanging on a shelf in good health and good time. Tattoos and memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your